I think oftentimes people don't realize what they have is really greatness because it comes so naturally to them. Like, it's like breathing that you're like, well, I'm a good writer, I'm a journalist, but you know, like this is something that's easy for me. Like for me, I'd be like, where do I start? Like, you know, but because you've lived with it or it's matured over time, you kind of think we take it for granted. And oftentimes, especially women, they don't really know how valuable it is.
Welcome to Loving the F. I'm Melissa Allison, and this is the podcast that looks at the forbidden and says, hey, baby. I talk to a new guest each week and examine the female, finances, friends, family, fitness, and all the other F words. So join me, especially if it's forbidden.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Loving the F. I am so excited to have the one and only Angela Durant of Be Brilliant Movement. And I first learned about you on Facebook, and I have been just intrigued by you, Angela, from the get-go. So thank you so much for joining us and being a part of this conversation. And let's get this started. Tell us about yourself, how you got to this Be Brilliant movement, and what inspired it.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Melissa. I'm excited to be here. And I love your work. I've actually researched you too, and love what you're doing, and the interviews that you've done have been amazing. So thank you. I actually started off in corporate America. My background was 28 years in hospitality and worked for all the big brands. And what got me from there to the Be Brilliant movement was kind of a catalyst moment for me. So my family didn't travel much when we were young. We didn't stay in nice, fancy, posh hotels. And so in college, I needed a job and I applied for work at a hotel. But I applied for housekeeping because I figured you don't need a degree to do that and I can clean. And so I applied, and the hotel that I applied to work for was in, it was an independent hotel. It was in Princeton, New Jersey, and they were still in a trailer because the hotel itself was brand new construction. So it hadn't even been completed yet. And the person who interviewed me said, you sure you want to work in housekeeping? I was like, yeah, I'll do. I needed extra money for school, right? Need to pay for that Ivy League education. I needed the cash. And so he said, are you sure? You know, you're going to have to clean toilets. And I said, I don't have a problem with that. And he said, I really don't think that's for you. Like, I don't think you're the perfect fit for that particular job. So I asked, well, do you have anything else? And he said, I may have another position in food and beverage. And so long story short, I ended up started working in the hotel kitchen, my very first hotel. And they were opening up in phases. So I got a chance to mingle and mix with all of the guests, the hotel guests, most of them corporate travelers or travelers relocating to the Princeton area. And I thought, this is so much fun. I can't believe I get to make muffins, you know, in the morning and talk to the guests, and I get paid to do that. And so that kind of started my career in the hotel business. And I learned that because it was a small company, we had the opportunity to wear many hats, you know, to work in different departments, to stretch and grow. And I liked that. And I felt like someone else asked me, like, when that entrepreneurial spirit was born. And I would say it was probably born there because I had an opportunity to do so many things. Fast forward about 15 years in, and I became the general manager of that hotel. So I went from the kitchen to, in the course of about 8 years, becoming the general manager of that hotel. And that hotel, under my leadership, became an award-winning hotel. But I learned a lot of lessons along the way. And I think I was able to build really strong teams there because I had worked in almost every department of that hotel. So the people who I worked with understood, like, they were like, you're one of us, right? You came up through the trenches. Like, you know what it's like to work in the kitchen, to be an hourly associate. Not, you weren't just this person that came in as a manager, but you know what it's like to have a guest yell at you or whatever, right? And so I think that helped. And so I think I became more entrepreneurial there. But 15 years in, I was asked to relocate to a brand new hotel and I got a new boss. And I don't know if you've experienced this, Melissa, before or not, but I thought I was the kind of girl who could work with anybody. I could be a chief and I can be an Indian. Like I'm a total team player. But a gentleman was brought in as my leader. He was a regional vice president, and we shall call him Ike. And Ike was not so easy to work for. I found myself trying to please him. I found myself going home and feeling like I just couldn't get it right, you know, and this became another award-winning hotel. So the stats, all the key metrics were good, but I just felt like we just weren't meshing well. And I remember specifically us having a meeting, and it was in my office, and he was down for a visit, and the other leaders of the hotel were in the office with me. And we were having a conversation about our competitive set, you know, and what our strategy was going to be. And I remember asking him, help me understand why you want us to make this change, this specific change, including someone into the mix that wasn't a true competitor. And the culture of the company for that past almost 15 years was that we could ask questions, right? That's how we learn and we grow and we collaborate, right? And he said to me in front of, you know, all the people who reported to me, he said, you're going to change it because I said so.
Oh.
Right. Wow. Right. And so I didn't really know how to, I think I laughed, you know, maybe a nervous laugh because I wasn't really anticipating that response.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the culture of the company that I had come to know. And then after the meeting was over, he got up, everyone left my office, he closed the door, he sat back down, he leaned in and he said, it's no secret that you and I don't like each other. And that was like a blow to the stomach.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I knew he was tough and I felt like, you know, he's hard to please, but never did it cross my mind that he didn't like me because I did not like him.
Yeah.
I just thought he's tough, right? And yeah. But in that moment, I realized that there's more to this than just a leader who's tough.
Yeah.
The breaking point for me was, you know, driving into work one day, my husband was driving and I just burst into tears. And he pulled over and he's like, what's the matter? What's going on here? And I said, I'm not happy anymore. Like it went from this job where you're making muffins in the kitchen and pleasing guests and having fun and building a team to feeling like you can't make the person who's leading you happy. And you're starting to feel like this isn't the place for you anymore. So maybe it was a week later, I received a call from a headhunter, which I never responded to headhunters' calls. Like ever, because I always thought at that point in my career, I thought that's so disloyal. I've been with this company for 15 years. Why would I ever, you know, accept the call from a headhunter, right? So I didn't respond. And a few days had passed after I got that message and I shared it with my husband. I was like, oh, by the way, a headhunter called me up the other day, but I'm not going to respond. He's like, are you kidding me? You are the same woman who was in tears on the side of the road, right? This is you. He was like, you need to find out what they're offering. So I did follow up with them and everything moved pretty quickly. Within like a day, they've had the interview set up and they were asking me for my resume, which by the way, I didn't even have a resume yet. Because I had worked for the same company for almost 15 years. Like who needs a resume?
Right.
I mean, now I would be considered a dinosaur because so many people move around from job to job. But back then, like I was just the one, I moved for different positions within the company, but I always stayed with the same company. And so my husband said, just give me the dates of when you worked places and I'll do your resume for you. You just go to sleep. I'll do your resume for you. So he did. And the ball started rolling and I got an interview. And the interview was with another regional vice president of one of the largest hotel companies on the planet. And so I took the interview and the call was going great and everything seemed to line up perfectly. And I remember it specifically because I was talking to him in my car. I took my interview in the car because it was a Saturday and I was preparing to fly out on Sunday to go to this conference where you are, Melissa, in Texas. It was in Dallas. Yeah. And he said to me, the person who was interviewing me, his name is Sean. I said to him, what's this number? I think it was like 214 or something. I said, what, Erica, where are you? And he said, I'm in Texas. And I said, oh, that's so funny. I'm coming to Texas tomorrow. He goes, really? He said, where are you staying? And I said, I'm going to be staying at the Gaylord. And he goes, I'm 20 minutes from that. He said, here's what we'll do. You get settled in and I'll come by and pick you up and we'll go for a second interview. I said, okay, great. And we did that and everything worked out great. And all the challenges were there. The pay was more money. And a funny thing happens though, right? As humans, I go back and I think about it all night and I'm thinking, can I really leave? Like, could I really leave a job that I've been at for 15 years? Maybe it's me. Like, maybe I'm not working hard enough. Maybe I need to do more. And what if I do step out there and take this opportunity on and I'm not as good as I think I am? Like, what if I fail? You know, what if what's out there is worse than what I have here? And so the meeting ended on Wednesday. And on my flight home, I remember thinking, I made my decision. I'm going to stay right where I am. I'm not going to go to another company. I've been here for 15 years. It's better for me to stay here. That was my decision, right?
Right.
Well, on the very next day, Thursday, I returned to the office. And at about 10 minutes after 11 a.m., I got a phone call from, let's say, Mike and Ike, right?
Right.
So Mike was Ike's boss. And they called me and said, are you going to be in the office for the next hour? And I said, yes. And they said, well, our plane just landed in Philadelphia International. And we're on our way to your property. And I said, are you specifically coming to see me? And they said, yes. And they said, and I need you to set aside a conference room where we can meet. So I said, okay. And I hung up. And of course, I was like, this isn't good, right? I just saw them. I just spent 3 days at a conference with them. Why would they specifically fly into my town to come and speak with me specifically?
Right.
So I called my mom, like, Mom, they're going to fight. She's like, calm down, relax. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Call me when they leave. So I said, okay. So, I mean, they were at the hotel, which seemed like in no time. And as soon as they got there, they marched me right into the conference room, sat me down, and they said, the company is moving in a different direction. And effective today, you will no longer be employed here.
Wow.
There was no write-ups in my file. You know the term at will? They were executing at will at that moment, right? It took everything I had. I said, well, can I have a few minutes to kind of think about this? And they were like, there is no thinking about it. Like, it pretty much is a done deal. The company is moving in a new direction, effective immediately. You know, by the end of the day, you will no longer be employed here. And I said, well, can I at least have a chance to talk to my staff? To say goodbye to them, because this had been like a stellar team. We were ranked number 3 in the portfolio and
wow.
Number 1 in cleanliness. If anything, I mean, that was the team that I loved the most. And they said, we will talk to your team. You go pack your things.
Oh my gosh.
It took everything I had not to cry in front of them, but I was like, I will not cry in front of them. And so I went back to my office, closed my door, and of course the tears just came, right?
Yeah.
I probably was in my office maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, and the phone rang. And I answered the phone like I always do, like, hi, thanks for calling. This is Angela. And who do you think it was on the other end?
Oh my gosh, it was the job offer.
Yes, yes. It was Sean. And one of the things that he said to me was, when we met in Dallas just a few days before, he said, your hotel is part of my territory. And he said, when I come to town, I'd like to walk your property. I want to see the hotel that you're running. And I was like, sure, just let me know when you're in town. Just let me know. So he was on the phone. He was like, hi. He's like, I'm going to be in your area today. I'd like to come by to see your hotel. Are you going to be there till the end of the day?
Oh, no.
Yes, yes, Melissa. And so I said, yes, I said, I'm going to be here. And I said, I'm going to be here until the end of the day. And he was like, okay, great. I'll call you when I'm pulling in. I was like, okay. I hang up the phone and I'm like, OMG, right? I'm like, how is this going to work? Because Mike and Ike are literally down the hall in the conference room meeting with my staff now.
Right.
And I'm packing up my office. So I needed to figure out, how am I going to buy myself some time and how is this all going to work out? So I text my leadership group and I say, you know, I'm expecting somebody from this large hotel chain to come by today. I'm going to step out for a little bit. If they come when I'm not here, Sean arrives before I get back, please put him in another boardroom and let them know I'll meet them there. And they were like, we got you. We got your back. No worries. No worries. They were a great team. And so I did that. I went out to lunch. I packed up my things. I packed up my office. And then I came back and Sean hadn't arrived yet. And then maybe 30 minutes, Sean called and said, I'm pulling into your parking lot now. I'll be in just a few minutes. So I'm like, okay. But I'm thinking, my heart is racing because I'm like, Mike and Ike are still here. They're still here. So I hear their footprints coming, you know, through the lobby floor, and they're saying goodbye to the folks at the front desk. And then I'll never forget this. Mike and Ike popped into my office and Mike said to me, you know, I wish you all the best. And Ike said, if you're lucky, you may get another job before your severance runs out.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought that was a really mean thing to say.
Yes.
But I didn't have any time to really meditate on that.
Yeah.
Because Sean was on his way in, and literally, Melissa, the electronic doors opened up. Mike and Ike walked out. And
no.
Walked Sean.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yep. And I invited him into my office. I was like, come on in. He goes, your office is so clean. Wow. And I'm thinking, yeah, because everything that was hanging on the walls is in the back of my trunk right now.
Right.
And so the rest from there is pretty much history. Like I did end up, they did give me an offer, and they ended up increasing the offer.
Wow.
But I learned a lot from that. I learned about, it was that day that I really became an entrepreneur. Even though I didn't have my own business then, my mindset changed because I've worked for a company for almost 15 years, I didn't really know my value in the marketplace. Because I never been out there. I didn't even have a resume. And so what this company was paying me, which was like $76,000 at the time. And I was, you know, in my 30s. So it was a pretty good, decent salary. I had never earned that kind of money before. And I didn't come from a family of people who earned that kind of money. So I was holding on so tightly to it that I was thinking, if I lose this job, how am I going to pay my rent? It felt devastating. And I, instead of looking for something else, a better opportunity, I held on as tight as I could to what I had, right?
Right.
And so in that moment, I felt like I never want to be in this situation ever again. Like I never want to be in a situation where someone has that much power over me, that much control over my finances or my fate, right? Yes. Who could come in a moment and say, effective immediately, you're no longer going to be here.
Right.
And so even though I continued to work in hospitality, I continued to run hotels for a living, it was more of a mindset. Like I became more entrepreneurial in what I did. And I understood that I bring value to this situation. And it's not so much the job itself, but it's what you're made of, right? It's like all your experiences. It's your courage, you know, it's, you know, your tenacity that they can never take away from you, that goes with you wherever you go, right? It shows up with you wherever you go. So that kind of started my mindset of, I have all these transferable skills that can be used in other arenas and they're valuable. So that's where it started. And then at one of my last hotels, I kind of had this epiphany. The director of sales at the time I found out, she didn't even tell me. I just kind of overheard that she had just written a children's book.
Oh.
And I was like, I didn't know you were a writer. She goes, well, that's what I love to do. She's like, I work in sales here. It pays the bills, but my passion is really for writing children's books. And then I had an assistant general manager who was, she loved on nights and weekends, she did interior design and decorating for events. And she could do, like, you could give her one idea, like a book or a picture, and she could transform the space. Wow. It was truly her gift, right? It's truly her gift. And so the epiphany that I had was, as I looked around and I got to know people and got to understand that they could do more things, or they were interested in other things outside of the hotel business, was that everybody has some special gift. Like, we all have it. Some of us, it takes us longer to discover it, but it's in everybody. And so that's where the Be Brilliant movement started. I was like, everybody has some form of brilliance, right? One of the things that Steve Jobs said was that no one there is any smarter than you. Everybody has something. And what I would add to that is that no one is any smarter than you in your zone of genius. Mm-hmm. Right? In your zone of genius, you could just walk into that confidently and own your own space, because that's your thing. Like, that's the gift that's been placed in your hands, right? And nobody can do it exactly in the way that you do it, right? And so that's how the Be Brilliant movement came about. That's how it started, about, you know, how light should never be hidden, and how so many people are working in jobs and you never see their light. Every now and then you might get a glimpse of their genius. And so the Be Brilliant movement is about really setting that free, like, yeah, really having people, helping them to discover what that brilliance is and deliver that to the world.
One of the things that I loved about your story is wanting to do the impossible, whatever the limiting belief is, and mm-hmm. turning around and doing exactly that. I know for me, I had the experience of applying for a fellowship at Stanford when I didn't meet the qualifications, but it said, if you don't meet the qualifications, go ahead and apply. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that, because I only had 3 years of radio and they wanted five. And so I'm like, I'm going to do it. And just the application process was transformative. It really challenged me and made me think about things that I never would have thought to think about, that I had to articulate. And after applying, it was like, okay, how does a Stanford fellow behave? What are her choices? Mm-hmm. What does her day-to-day look like? I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And I didn't get it, but I feel like just doing it, it changed my life. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes we have these visions of what that thing should look like, and we don't allow the natural evolution of yourself to take place. We think, oh, I failed, you know, oh, I got laid off from the job, or whatever the situation is. And I've been laid off plenty. That sounds really bad.
No.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
I've had my fair share. I'm 55. I've had my fair share of stories, experiences in the work world. But yeah, it's like that natural evolution. It's like even now, the natural evolution in my own life. And so that's what I really like about you, doing the impossible. And you started off growing up in the housing project. Am I saying that right?
That's
and you
right.
went to Cornell, which is like, oh my gosh, I can't even get a fellowship, but you went to Cornell, which is incredible. And running a hotel, going from the kitchen to this. So what is it that you hear in your clients that prevents them from doing the impossible, believing that they can do the impossible? And what do you tell yourself that keeps you doing the impossible?
That's a great question. Well, but let me just pause there for a second and just honor you for going for it. You know, I think that many times people will see what the criteria is, what the requirements are, and say, okay, well, I don't meet the requirements, and kind of shrink. And you're like, well, I don't meet the requirements, it says, but you can still apply anyway. And I'm going to do that. And I think that's really important. And then you said that it changed you. Of course it did, because you stepped into something. You didn't shrink and play small. You just said, hey, like, this is something I want, so I'm going to go for it, right? So I love that. Like, we're kindred spirits.
Yes, we are.
And I would say that, you know, with as far as coming from where I came from, I kind of feel like I always say to people, even with everything that's going on right now, we're made for this moment. And that there are life experiences that get stacked, right? So all these different things that happen to us that help us to grow and mature. And, you know, I know there's kind of a knowing, like I know that there is more out there for us. And what I've learned is that we can create it, that we are powerful enough to design what we want. And it doesn't have to be this or that, it can be both. Right. And maybe it might look a little different than we imagine it to be, but we can create what it is that we want. And what I find is sometimes, you know, with the women that I work with and some brilliant men too, what I find is that oftentimes when they come to me, they haven't given themselves permission to embrace what's possible. Or because everybody, like I said, everybody is brilliant. I believe you're born brilliant. Like there's something that you have, a seed that's in your hand that's just waiting to be planted. I think oftentimes people don't realize what they have is really greatness because it comes so naturally to them. Like it's like breathing that you're like, well, I'm a good writer, I'm a journalist, but you know, like this is something that's easy for me. Like for me, I'd be like, where do I start? Like, you know, but because you've lived with it or it's matured over time, you kind of think we take it for granted. And oftentimes, especially women, they don't really know how valuable it is. And so when we work on building brands, like that's a starting point, because in order for you to really step into the fullness of what your brand can be, you need to be able to embrace who you are and all the wonderfulness that you have. And sometimes we can't see it. Like they say, you can't see the picture when you're in the frame. So I think that's a starting point to help people really recognize, like if you only can see yourself the way I can see you, you think a whole lot differently, right? You take more chances, you'd be more courageous, right? I remember when I started in the hotel business, I thought I was gonna do something completely different, but my mom came to visit the hotel for the very first time. And I was so excited for her to come because by the time she visited, I was a manager. I was not the manager. I was a manager. I was working in sales and I had my little desk. You know, I shared an office with like four other sales managers. And I was like the grunt of the litter, right? I was the one they gave me all the extra stuff to. And I had my computer and I had my business cards. It was the first time I ever had business cards, right? So I was so excited for her to see that. So when she came in, the general manager's office door was open and we had to pass his office to get to our little space. And as we were walking through, my mother said, oh, I love your office. It's beautiful, right? And I was like, Mom, are you kidding me? That's the general manager's office. That's not my office. Come in here. This is where my desk is. And she had this disappointed look on her face like, this is not all that, you know? But I was excited because I had never had business cards before. I never had all these things, right? And I looked at her and I was like, what? And she goes, I thought that was your office, right? And I said to her, I was like, that's the general manager's office. Are you kidding me? That's a big, beautiful space. Like what? And she said to me, Ann, she said, I can see you in that office. I can see you sitting behind that desk. And when I walked past it, I thought for sure that's your office because that's what I could see you sitting there. Well, many years later, that would become my office, right? And sometimes we need people who can see for us what we can't see for ourselves. And so she planted that seed. She planted the idea that I could even, I'm like, you could see me there? Really? She was like, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And so when it came to fruition, she was like, I told you.
I got to meet your mom. I love her.
Well, she's passed on, but you, when you meet me, you meet her, right?
Oh, I love that.
And so I try to hold that space for my clients too. And so I think it's work that you're doing that, you know, plants those seeds that opens people's minds up to what's possible for them. It's great work, you know, because without people being able to see what's out there for them, you know, really holding a vision for themselves, it's hard to step into that.
Well, you know, we get locked into our stories. Mm-hmm. We get locked into the belief. While I was in Utah, I had a friend who started this group of people who were getting over broken hearts. You know, it's like whether it's divorce or a breakup of whatever kind, you know, this group of people. And he was going through a divorce himself. And his husband had the house with the kids. So on the weekends, he got to come and be with the kids. And he was talking about how he was sleeping in a toddler bed. And this man is like over 6 foot tall. And so everybody's rallying. They're like, oh no, well, we can get this for you. We can do. And he's like, no, it's okay. It's okay. And they're like, no, you cannot sleep in that. And he's like, you know, I'm with my kids. And I finally said, he likes his story. You know, leave him alone. He likes his story. This is his experience. He gets to have it. And he just started laughing. He's like, well, thanks for calling me out, Melissa. And he's like, but yeah, I like it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we like telling our story too much. Whatever we get out of it, the feeling of a victim or a martyr or like, see, I'm right. Sometimes it's just about proving ourselves right.
Yeah. And what you did was you disrupted that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that
that's what you did. You disrupted that and called it out so that he could see it. He could see it in a different way.
Yeah.
And you said like, you like that story.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how can we, for the people who are listening, how can we disrupt our own story ourselves?
Wow. That's a good,
It requires some insightfulness, you know, some self-reflection to know that you're even telling a story, but how can you do that?
So I'll share something with you that a coach of mine did for me, and then I'll share with you what I do to help me break through when I'm challenged, because sometimes we don't even know we're telling ourselves a story. So I was having a coaching session. This was years ago. I was having a coaching session with my coach, and I said to her, we were talking about my target audience, and I was saying, oh, I'm going to be working with women because Caucasian middle-aged men would never work with me, is what I said to her. And I just kept talking, and she's like, and she's like, what did you say? I was like, well, you know, middle-aged white men would never work with me. And she was like, well, what evidence do you have of that in your life? Let's talk about that. Let's kind of unpack. And I was like, well, what do you mean? That's just kind of a fact. And she's like, is it though? Is that really a fact? And I said, well, let me think about that. I'm like, well, my mentors are middle-aged white men. My partner, because remember, I was a hotel general manager. And at that time, you're thinking 28 years ago, there wasn't anybody that looked like me and very few women general managers. They were mostly middle-aged white men. And they were my partners, like they were my colleagues. They would call me and say, I need your help with this, you know, like everybody around me, even my mentors fit that scope. So she's like, so even the people who recruited me to go work at other properties fit this. So she was like, you don't even have women. You know, that doesn't even what they look like. And I said, wow, I've been telling myself that story for a long time. And I accepted it as fact. I never saw it as a story. I just accepted it as fact. And I went to a conference and I was talking with this guy who fit that archetype. And I was like, would you ever work with me? Would you buy from me? Would you? And he was like, if you solved the problem that I had, absolutely. And he goes, and for based on what our engagements was so far, why wouldn't I? He was like, the fact that I'm an African-American woman wouldn't, he was like, I never even crossed my mind. So sometimes we need someone else to help, like what you did, to disrupt that pattern, because we get in that story and it's kind of like, it can show up in a lot of different ways. And a lot of it could be fear for us not stepping into doing other things. But what I do is when I'm challenged with things, now I think about it. I try to look at it from different perspectives and think about it. But one of the techniques that I use to break, a lot of times it shows up for me as fear. Fear is anticipating the opposite. Like, so if we know that one thing is possible, then universal law says that the opposite is also out there, right? And so when I moved to my current home, was, you know, it's a modest home, but for me, from where I come from, this is like a palace, right? And every day I drove it up, parked in my driveway, I couldn't believe I was so blessed to live here. But then these gremlins started coming. Like, I started getting these voices like saying, you know, you're going to lose this. You're going to lose. There's no way you can pay this mortgage. What if you lose your job? If you lose your job, then you're not going to be able to live here. You're not going to be able to live here. And it was really bothering me. It would come up. It kept coming up, these negative thoughts. I'm like, why am I thinking these negative thoughts? I don't want to think that. Well, trying to fight the negative thoughts doesn't work for me. And I don't think it works for most people. It just keeps you in that story. So my technique is always to think about, okay, I never fight those ideas. I say, it's possible. That could happen, right? Anything negative that comes our way could happen. You could get fired. You could, you know, lose your home. You could lose your car or whatever. You could get a divorce. Like, your husband could cheat on you. Like, all those things are possible. But it's also possible that if these things came to you, if you were blessed with these things, that there could be the opposite out there, that something even greater, something even better could be awaiting you. So why are you holding on to a job that doesn't serve you anymore? Why are you staying in a relationship that doesn't serve you or support you anymore? Because you're afraid when, you know, your dream guy is out there waiting for you and he's just waiting for you to let go of this so that you could have that. And yeah. So that's where the focus goes to what's possible. You start to think about, okay, I could sleep in the little bed, but what else is possible for me? What else am I capable of? What else? Maybe I don't do it on my own. Maybe help comes, you know? I meet up with a Melissa, you know? I meet up with someone else that is brought into my life, right? But if this is possible, that could happen. There's also something greater that could happen, and that's where the focus should go, and that helps pull you forward.
I like
that. And you'll find that those gremlins, all that negative talk starts going away when you think bigger. So what I did in this particular instance was I looked at houses that were like 5 to 10 times more than where I lived. Because I was like, this is getting taken away from me. Oh, it must be. I must be moving into like a mansion. So let me start looking at those. And then those voices went away. I was like, what happened? They're gone.
Have you ever listened to Tiffany Haddish? She's the comedian actress. Mm-hmm. I listened to her book, oh my gosh, The Last Black Unicorn. It's amazing. I highly recommend it. I think she's a queen at reframing her story. Mm-hmm. And she shares a story. I don't remember if it's in a book or if it was an interview I saw with her, but she talks about being homeless and sleeping in her little car. And she's like, well, no place is safer than Beverly Hills. I'll sleep on the streets where all those mansions are, you know? And she later is at a party in one of the mansions. She's like, I used to sleep right outside this house in my car. But the things we tell ourselves when we're at our lowest low, what we think is our lowest low, mm-hmm. I think it can always get worse and it can always get better. And it's what direction are we going to hold on to? What are we going to grab onto? Mm-hmm. And I think words are really important. I was astonished when reading Michelle Obama's book, Becoming. We were both born in 64. You know, growing up back in the 60s and 70s, there were riots, there were lynchings of Black people, there were, you know, all sorts of horrible things happening. And especially, I'm growing up on the West Coast in California. She's growing up, you know, more on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And it's rough out there for her community. But she shares how her parents said, you can do it. You know, mm-hmm. you can do anything you want to do. Anything is possible. I was growing up with, my parents were going through a divorce when I was very young. And my father, I love him to death. He's like one of the best men I've ever known. But it was a painful time for him. And he was saying how stupid we were, what idiots we were. And just like our mother and stuff like that. But I'm this white woman growing up on the West Coast. You'd think if you go by what society says and what that story is, I'm the one who should be excelling. And Michelle's the one who should be suffering. But the opposite happened. And it has to do with, my belief is, just that the contrast of our experience is, what are we telling ourselves? Who are the people around us to get, what are the messages they're giving us, you know? Right. And I'm kind of going through this period, and I'm sorry, I've gone off.
No.
But I'm struggling with this belief that the five people you spend the most time with, you know, that's what makes you up of who you are. And so how do you balance that? What do you think?
Yeah, like I love the idea of you are the makeup of the five people you're around. I was just thinking of this. It's so funny that you brought that up, because the five people that I have around me now, and I pick and choose, right? I pick and choose, are all people who I don't know. So I'm like, okay, if I could have any five people around me, who would I be like? Who would I be a good makeup of? And I was like, who would be like me that I would enjoy time? I was like, okay, Oprah.
Okay. First on my list.
Like Seth Godin, you know, maybe I would hang out with Brene Brown.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, because why? And why limit myself to only the people I know, right?
Right.
And I was like, so, and what would I gain from being around them? Like, you know, what would rub off on me for the better, right? So I start thinking about that. And I think about, like, I really cherish the people in my life. I've never had a lot of friends. I've had a small little village of really good friends. And I grew up with a brother. I didn't have any sisters, and I've always wanted sisters. My best friend, who's the polar opposite of me, her name is Lorna. And Lorna is an introvert. You know, she does all my bookkeeping now. She's a taskmaster. Like, where's that receipt? Give me that, you know. But I said to her the other day, I said, every precious moment in my life, when I look back over pictures, you were always there, like aww, silent in the background, helping set up tables, greeting guests, you know, doing things behind the scene. My first speaking engagement, you were there. You know, the first time I started my business, you were there in the back of the room waiting for sales to come in or no sales to come in. She was there, right? And so I found that my pattern is to surround myself with people I can trust, yeah, and who are very authentic and people I feel safe with, but also who challenge me, you know? And so those are the people I let into my little tiny village, and people who help build me up, you know, like when, on the day when no sales come in and the day when lots of sales come in. I remember I told her I was going to pay her for this event, and it was when I was just starting out, and I paid everybody. I had other friends, like associates who did work for me, and I paid them what I said I was going to pay them. And I said, and I'm going to pay you too. And I took out the checkbook to cut her a check. And she said, you're not going to pay me. She said, I know what you made. Like, I did your books. I know what you made. And you didn't, you just barely broke even. And I would never take money from you. Oh, and now like I do all kinds of stuff for her, you know, like I do all kinds of special things. She's like, we're in COVID. And she's like, who put a gift card for, you know, for ShopRite in my inbox? And she goes, and then we're at the grocery store, and she's like, I think I need this. I'm going to be doing vegan this week. I need this. And then my husband shows up at her door with groceries, with everything she has, so she doesn't have to go out, right?
Oh, that's so awesome.
But it's like relationships like that I value, and I try to, we get to choose, right? We get to choose the environment. And I will tell you, I have a wonderful husband. I love him dearly, but he is not an entrepreneur. He does not have an entrepreneurial mindset. He kind of has a 9-to-5, put your head down, you get paid every week or every 2 weeks, right? And that's not what this journey is. This journey is not that, but when you get paid, it could be super great, but it's like a roller coaster, and not everybody has a tolerance for that. So when it comes to talking about my business, that's not always conversations in depth that I have with him, because it's not, you know, he doesn't see things the way that I see them. That doesn't make him a bad person. It's just that we're different. And so we have to be mindful and know that when it comes to taking risks and being entrepreneurial, that's not where you go. But if you want to go to someone that's going to look at things and give you the black and white concrete, you know, then you go and bounce that idea off of that person during that time, right? And so we have people in our lives that support us in different ways. If I wanted someone who to show me he loves me, you know, because I always tell my me and the friends that we do the five love languages. And so my friend Lorna is auditory, so she likes words of affirmation. Right? She wants the man to tell her he loves her. She wants to get those texts in the morning, that good morning, sweetheart. Like, well, that's not me at all. Like, that's nice. All of that is nice, but show me. You know, your actions will speak way louder than words. And that's who my husband is, right? He's acts of service is his love language. And so he'll do things for me to show me he cares. Like if the lighting is good in this room, that's because I have this big ring light that he bought
for my business. I need to get one of those.
So that's what I do. Like I have a very small, and some people I know, they have a ton of friends. I never had a ton of friends.
Yeah.
I always have people who I could have conversations like I'm having with you, very authentic one-on-one conversations where we get to know each other and surround myself with people, whether they be my real friends or fictitious friends, like a Michelle Obama, you know, like learning lessons from them, you know, how they live their lives and how they've overcome their challenges.
Yeah, because we all have them, whether it's as a mother, as a friend, as a lover, a partner, you know, as an entrepreneur, we mm-hmm. all have challenges. And it's like, what is the opportunity in the challenge? I shared in my episode last week, I just gave everybody an update. I shared how I finally just snapped, because last year going through the process of losing my home and stuff, it's like, okay, well, you know, this is my fault and I'm going to own it. And I took a risk, you know, it's on me. And so let's just buck up, pay the piper and let's start rebuilding and stuff. So it's been a year of rebuilding, and 2020 is supposed to be my year. I launched my Waking Aphrodite and then, you know, stuff happens after the second show, like COVID-19. And I bragged that it took a worldwide pandemic to shut my business down. You know, it's like nothing before that, but only a worldwide pandemic. And it didn't shut it down permanently. It's just taking a beat, you know? And so it's like, you know, I'm looking for that silver lining. Where's the lesson? Where's the opportunity? And then finally, just my daughter having to go back to the dentist for a fifth time, it's like everything just snapped and came crashing down, and I lost it. And I think we need to look for the silver lining all the time, or the opportunity, whatever you want to call it, whatever challenge that we have, because we all do have them. But when we have that moment of snapping, whatever you want to call it, and losing it, I got my kids to a safe place, because I'm like, they don't need to see this because they've never seen it. And I just allowed myself to go through the process and cried and cried and cried. And it was very cleansing and healing. I mean, all the tears from the last year plus needed to happen. And I think we're too hard on ourselves when that does happen. It's like, we get to be human. We get to be flawed. Yeah. It's like I told my kids, I said, you saw the human part of me. Right. And now they get to watch me rebuild and recover from that.
And, you know, even though you're a mom, you're a business owner, you know, you're still human.
Yeah.
You're still
not a robot.
And the fact that you're rebuilding from that is that strengthens a muscle too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
That, you know, like you can take on other stuff. Now your capacity is going to be greater because you're able to bounce back from that, and you strengthen that muscle and the people who are watching. So it's so interesting, because sometimes you don't even realize the people who are watching, or in your case, your listeners. It's like you give them permission to be human too, as they continue to grow and expand.
Well, so what advice are you giving your clientele during this time of pandemic? It's like nobody knows for sure what the world is going to look like on the other side of this, you know, how we're going to function. How do we continue to move forward? What are some of the concerns that you're hearing, and how are you helping your clients to overcome those?
Yeah. So one is, I do my best to set the example And I would say I've generated more revenue now than I ever have in my business. I know that it's happening. I mean, I'm not clueless about what's going on. However, it's almost like the assignment that you were given hasn't changed. The mission that you're on, how you want to serve people, hasn't changed. We just may have to do it differently. And I talked to a woman who is a private chef, and she was saying, I can't make money now. And I was like, okay, that's one way we can look at it. I said, but I was like, I only speak for myself, and I'm just one woman, right? I've been grazing since March. I was like, comfort food has been my best friend. Like, I'm home and I want to eat good stuff. Like, I want to eat tasty food. I don't want to eat like, and I said, I would love for you to be able to get some food. We just got to figure out how you could get it to me. Like, you know, and I said, and I don't think I'm alone. I was like, I think there are other grazers out there too, who want the real deal. They want the scratch with real butter, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, so I think it's the way we look at things. So let's look at it and see what else is possible. The other thing is with, I don't know if you ever heard of the black ceiling, right? So we heard about the glass ceiling, right?
Yes.
With women trying to, well, the black ceiling is pretty much the same thing, but referring to women of color who, there are very few of us in the C-suite at Fortune 500 companies. There are very few of us.
Yes.
And there's a book by Sheryl Sandberg.
Yes. Yeah.
About leaning in, right? About leaning in. Yes. And, but what I find is that, like, I get that. I understand it. I live that because I worked in corporate America. I was I ran hotels, and the majority of the people that I sat in boardrooms with were men, right? And so what I tell a lot of the people that I talk to, mostly women, is that I'm not a big proponent of leaning in. Because I've tried it. I've leaned in, I've raised my hand, I've shared my brilliant ideas, and people were like, okay. And then the guy next to me shared my brilliant ideas, and they were like, great idea. Great. We love that. We love that. And I'm like, but I just said that, right? And so I just said that we have choices. And I think the most important thing is that we realize that we're more powerful than we think, right? We're creators and we have choices. And so I tell women that you can choose that and there's nothing wrong. As long as you're making the powerful decision, there's no right or wrong. But if you're not celebrated where you are, then we live in a day and age with technology where you can be a queen. You know, you can create your own boardroom. So I say, you know, why be stressed in an environment like that when you can just push away and say, okay, if my words, if my voice isn't valued here, then once I know who I am, once I know what I have to offer, no matter what position you're in, you know, if you just fell down and you're dusting your knees off and you're getting back up again, it doesn't change who you are and what you have to offer, right? That you can walk away without friction. You can walk away and create something else. And the millions of dollars that you built, that you helped someone else build in their firms, you can start doing that for yourself. And I think once the women I talk to realize that they have a choice and that they have gifts, you know, and they have these transferable skills, then they look at things differently. COVID, no COVID. There's still a way. It's almost like there's this rock in front of you and you can be like water, right? You can go around the side, you can go around the top, you can go around underneath it. Like there are ways, and this is really calling us to really rise up and be aware of what's available to us, right?
Yeah.
I want to share something else with you if we have time, if it's okay.
Yeah.
So a few years ago, I had this dream, right? And this, I had this dream, and it was bizarre. There was this like lord of the house was sitting at the front of the tall, long table, and he was feeding this little pooch, you know, a little dog, like scraps from the table. And then underneath the table, there was this woman who was on her knees and she was crying and like begging for food. Clearly she was hungry and she was crying out to the lord of the house for food. And in my dream, the lord of the house kind of looked under the table at this woman and then turned his back and continue to feed this dog, right? And then I woke up, right? And I'm a woman of faith, right? So I'm like, what? Like, that was disturbing. Like, what was that about? Like, yeah. So I called my mom and I'm like, I had this dream. And then, you know, the Lord of the house, and she goes, well, what do you think that meant? And I was like, I don't know what it meant, but, you know, that's not what we're taught. Like, we're taught to, you know, feed the hungry. We're taught to be compassionate. Like, why would he turn his back to this woman who clearly was in need under the table, right? Yeah. And why would he satisfy this dog and not her, right? She's a human, right? And as I was talking in my rage, I got it, right? It went off. And my mom always says, messages come for you first before you share them with anybody else. They're really to minister to you, right?
Right.
And so I was like, I wouldn't have fed her either. And my mom was like, what do you mean? Why would you say that? Right.
Yeah.
And I said, because she doesn't know who she is. She's under the table, right? And she's begging for something that's already hers. Because yeah. above the table, on this table, stretched long and wide and high and deep, is like a smorgasbord, like anything you can wow. ever want or imagine. All the food is there. Everything is there. And around this table are all these chairs with place settings,
yeah. right?
Everything is there. And she's crying out for something that she feels like she needs. But from her perspective, you know, she's put herself in a place that doesn't belong. She doesn't belong under the table.
Right. She's not chained under there.
No, she's not chained under there. All she has to do is rise up and take her place and enjoy what it is that she wants. Like, there's an abundance out there for all of us, right? But sometimes from our perspective, we can't even see it.
Yeah.
Sometimes from our perspective, we put ourselves with other people or things when we don't even belong there.
Right.
You know, and if my kid was like screaming and having a tantrum on the floor and there was what he wanted was just in the chair, I would say, get up, get in your chair and you can have all that is mine is all that is yours. Right.
Yeah, right.
And so I think about that, like that really stuck with me because I was like, do I sometimes cry out for things that are within reach? And then I talk to women who are way smarter than me. Brilliant yeah. ladies, like really brilliant people who don't know who they are. So they're yeah. like under the table saying, I need help, you know, and they are not. And I'm like, you've got like alphabet soup after your name. I know you're smart enough to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
But when you're not clear on who you are, even though things are within reach, you never go for them. You never stand up, like you never rise up to get this abundance that's out there. So yes, COVID-19 is happening. And as for me and my family, like we are very cautious. We wear masks. We do things, but we do them carefully. But it doesn't stop us.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't stop us. And I don't buy into any of the stories, like you were talking about the stories earlier, that it's impossible. Because it's like, okay, well, I can't go into somebody's home and prepare meals for them right now. Maybe that is true, maybe. But what else can I do?
Right.
What can I create that's different that maybe my customers have never even thought of?
Right. Well, I have like a million more questions for you, Angela, because I mean, how do you, like with your dream is like, the first thing I thought of was my relationships with my husband, with my father. It's accepting scraps of affection as scraps. And so it's like, I refuse to accept that anymore. I deserve more than that. And then, you know, how do we identify that we're there and identify that greatness? And I mean, we need another conversation is what I'm saying. We need more, but I don't want to infringe on your time. You've been so generous with us here. I do have one last question for you though, that mm-hmm. I ask all my guests.
Yes.
And it is, what did you used to believe was forbidden in your life that now you embrace, now you enjoy? It's no longer a forbidden. It's that feast on the table.
That's a great question. What did I believe that was forbidden? Wow. I guess every step along the way, I thought I didn't know what was possible for me now. Like even as of late, my coach said to me, you know, you're building a $1 million business. And I was, and I just kept talking because I was like, she's crazy. and she stopped me, and she said, she goes, and she's built a $1 million business, so she knows what it looks like, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't know what it looks like. So she's like, no, you're building and you're impacting a lot of lives, right? And so that's, I never even thought that that was, it wasn't something that was like in the near future, like maybe off to the wild, but nothing in the near future. And so what do I believe that I thought was forbidden or impossible before? When I was working in corporate America, when I was that girl before she got fired, I didn't ever think that I could create something for myself that could be better. Like I thought like that's as good as it gets because I compared it to what I knew. So now what I know, and I think this will be good for your listeners, is that you get to create it. Even if it doesn't exist, even if, and I tell my clients, even if you don't know all the steps to get there, that doesn't cancel out the fact that you can believe that it's possible, right? That you can have a vision for it, even though, because really, once you make the decision that that's what I want, like I want to impact lives. I don't want any woman to ever feel like they don't have a choice again, because I know they're brilliant and nobody can tell me any different. Once they understand that and they make a decision, all the other things come, right? Yeah. A lot of times people think, well, I have to have the money first or I can't get that. No, that's not the right way. You make the decision first and then everything comes. Like you yeah. showed up in my life. We didn't yeah. know each other. You no. showed up. And you know, everything that we need, I have an international team now. I have designers, web developers, and I work with this guy in the Netherlands. I didn't even know him before. And he showed up and it's a perfect, it's like a puzzle piece.
You can drive from California to New York only seeing the first 500 feet ahead of you. Yeah. That's all we have to see to keep moving forward. I don't mm-hmm. have to see the whole way to New York. I just have to see the first 500 feet.
Right. But in your heart, you can, like, there are no limits. Like, you yeah. can create, like, okay, you don't have to decide, do I stay home with the kids? Can I work? Whatever. You get to say, well, what if?
Yeah.
You know, if I could create this, let's just say if you could create it without friction, what would it look like?
Right.
Well, I would choose to have this, 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 and that. Okay, let's focus on that and figure out a roadmap to that.
Yeah. Well, Angela, thank you so much. You have been great. I love talking to you. We are going to have to do this again, so I hope you'll agree to come back.
I would love to.
And we are going to explore more of this because you have so much to share. I love this conversation. And thanks. I look forward to next time.
Thank you for having me, Melissa.
You've been listening to Loving the F. I'm Melissa Allison, and I hope you'll join me again next week.